For members only, Golf Smarter number 206 for November 24, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Author Scott Gummer on Homer Kelly's Golfing Machine.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
That's my wife, and hey, today's my son's birthday. Because he's out of the country right now, why don't you join me at the Golf Smarter Facebook page and wish Danny Green a happy birthday? He would not be expecting this at all, and he'd be able to find it. A little off the wall, but why not? What the heck? Welcome and thanks for keeping up with the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's show is brought to you by The Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. We have so many golf books that I want to recommend covering a lot of different golf topics. And when you purchase a book from The Golfer's Mart, you're actually buying it from Amazon.com, but we get a little commission. So it continues your kind support of our happy little podcast. Now, getting to record these fun interviews flows kind of like my golf game. Sometimes I'll get into this groove of doing interview or playing golf multiple times each week. And then, like right now, I'll only get out to play once or twice a month. Now, that relates to today's show because this show was actually recorded in June, but came up this week because I've been involved in an online discussion on the golfers group at LinkedIn.com where someone requested a suggestion for a good book to read during the off season. Perfect timing. It was a great time to bring this interview up. I actually forgot about it. With all the interviews that we've featured on the Golf Smarter podcast with authors, I found this request so much easier than someone writing in to say, "Hey, Fred, fix my golf swing." I can't do that. I'm not the right guy for that. Our guest is Scott Gummer, and his book, Homer Kelly's Golfing Machine, subtitled The Curious Quest That Solved Golf, is a really entertaining and interesting story of an unlikely golf hero. But like the golf swing, this story has too many details for an overview. So let's just have Scott tell the story himself. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Scott.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Fred. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, well, great, because this is a fun little book that you have here, Homer Kelly's Golfing Machine. You know, I just want you to tell the story. And why don't we just start right there? What is this book about?
Yeah, I wrote a book about a guy who wrote a book. So, there you go.
Well, thank you very much. It was really great talking to you. And
thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, right.
No, the story is it's the story of golf's most curious genius, and really an untold story about an underappreciated person who really changed the game. And the story goes that Homer Kelly was in the Depression era. He was a science-minded guy, but the only job he could get during the Depression was as a fry cook at a billiard hall in Tacoma, Washington. And his boss, the guy who owned the place, was a golf nut. Kept haranguing Homer to come out and play, and Homer would needle him back and say, you know, what's the point, what's the fun, and eventually the guy got him to come out and play. And Homer went out his first time and shot 116, which is not unusual or even unreasonable for a first-timer, but he was
the fact
very...
that he, you know, for the first time to really keep score, you know, a legitimate score and paying attention for the first time out, I found that to be very interesting, too.
Yeah. So, but he was very perplexed. He didn't understand how it could be so hard. The ball's just sitting there on a tee. It's only going to do what you tell it to do. You know, there's no defense. There's nobody trying to tackle you. The ball isn't, you know, knuckling or curving or anything like that. You're not being judged. So... It really was a very vexing proposition for him, and he didn't play again for 6 months. And when he did, he shot a 77.
And I hate him already.
Exactly. We should all be so lucky.
Right.
And so he was really trying to figure out. And that day, golf was great. Golf was fun. Loved it. And
sure.
And so he went out and sought the opinions of a golf pro, teaching pro, to explain why he was so bad one day and so good the next, and could not get a sufficient or satisfactory explanation. He said a lot of people could describe golf, but nobody could explain it. And the difference being that Homer used the example that he can tell you that, you know, there's a car driving down the street, and that's describing, but explaining is when you get into, you know, the internal combustion engine and, you know, all that kind of stuff of how it actually happens. And so left without any reasonable or satisfactory explanation, if you wanted it done right, you're going to have to do it yourself. Thus began Homer's odyssey that took the better part of 40 years for him to really understand and study the physics and the geometry behind the swing, and not just the swing, but any swing. And the distinction there is that if Homer had simply said what other people were already saying, but Homer had simply said it in science speak, it really wouldn't have been that interesting or revolutionary. But what Homer said truly was revolutionary and different. And so in 1969, he wrote, so it was about 30 years that he had been studying before he actually self-published a book called The Golfing Machine. And Homer was nothing if not fastidious. So he explains why it took him 30 years to figure all this stuff out. And one of the revolutionary things that I mentioned was that whereas other golf books, notably like, you know, Ben Hogan's famous Five Lessons, where other instruction books ask the golfer to conform, hold the club like this, here's how you, you know, build your stance, and, you know, here's how you swing. And Homer's book really solved the golf swing for anyone, and essentially said, started out with, you know, you can grip the club any one of six ways, reasonably speaking. And based on that, you can still find matched components that will create a scientifically sound golf swing. And so, and that's really the basis of Homer's work, is matched components. Every golf swing exists in the book. But Homer would say that, for example, Tiger Woods might be more efficient if he matched up his components. And so the story goes that, that Homer self-published his book, and now he's a guy in Tacoma with a golf instruction book without any credibility or any notoriety. And just the fascinating thing about the story is that at every turn, when someone needed someone else to advance the story, that person somehow fortuitously arrived. And that person for Homer Kelly was a gentleman named Ben Doyle, legendary teacher out of Carmel Valley, who at the time was a young, 37 years old, teaching pro up in Seattle. And again, you know, it's just fascinating the way Homer was. He was so diligent in his study of the golf swing, but it was everything else too. Somehow or another, a big literary agent out of New York had heard about it and found him, and so before Homer would answer the initial inquiry, he got in touch with the Better Business Bureau to see if the guy was legit. And before he would go talk to Ben Doyle, he'd go park his car in the parking lot and watch Ben teach. And, you know, I mean, it's that kind of thing. You know, Homer had they had a piano in his house. Not one of the people who was close to him ever remembers him playing a song. Everybody remembers him playing the scales. So it's that kind of thing that is, that I think, you know, speaks to the level at which he took on this, you know, this magnum opus, as it were. And so it, Ben Doyle, he got it instantly. They were both, Homer and Ben were both Christian Scientists, and that had a lot to do with Ben's ability to understand the approach that Homer took to the book. And so, Ben then moved to Carmel Valley, where he connected with a young prodigy named Bobby Clampett, who became one of the greatest amateur golfers ever. And they became very close. Homer had three daughters, and Bobby had just lost his father. And they basically, you know, worked together every day after school. And as I say, Bobby went on to have one of the most decorated amateur careers in golf history, and then went out on tour with tremendous promise, came close. You know, he was low amateur at the Masters and low amateur at the U.S. Open, and then showed up at the British Open in 1982 at Troon, and was on fire and had a 7-stroke lead through 5 holes in a 3rd round. And then that Saturday, that 6th hole, the wheels fell off. And he, from there, just stumbled his way in, shot like 76, 77, or vice versa, and wound up tied for 10th. And it really just put so many questions and doubts in his mind, where he had always been so supremely confident. But it also afforded all the critics who didn't understand what Homer, had done, didn't think that he had any credibility, took that opportunity to just blast him and his theories. And then Homer died unexpectedly the following year. And really, that was a double whammy that kind of sent the golfing machine on what I call a slow march toward obsolescence. And that existed for the better part of, really about 15 years until we get into the new millennium. And the whole while, the golfing machine was a cult classic, and people still, referred to it and used it. But kind of three things have happened to really bring it back with this renaissance of relevance, as it were. Well, 4 things, the first of which is technology came along and proved Homer right. Homer did all of his studies without any sorts of computers and whatnot. And nowadays, with all the video analysis and all the technology and things like that, a lot of that is proving Homer right, which is really tremendous.
That's amazing.
The other thing is that Steve Elkington was introduced to Ben Doyle. And just as when Ben had met Homer and Ben read the book, Homer said that he thought he could help make Ben a better teacher. And Ben had been teaching for 17 years and thought he was, doing just fine, thank you very much. But went home that night, read the book, and woke up the next morning feeling like he hadn't helped anybody. He just wondered what he'd been doing for the last 17 years.
Wow.
And to this day is the first and foremost, practitioner of the golfing machine. And it was a lot like that with Elkington. He had the sweetest swing going. He'd won a major. I think he'd won the Players that year. But when he met Ben, it clicked. Elkington's a very, mathematical, science-minded kind of guy as well. And so he really began testing the golfing machine principles as taught to him by Ben under tour conditions. And he's had a great career. He hasn't won another major since then. Although I'll tell you, the fascinating thing about Elkington is he's allergic to grass.
You're kidding.
Like severely allergic to grass, which is not a good thing for a golfer.
Not a good thing for a golfer.
Not a good thing for a golfer.
I mean, like when it's fresh cut grass, or just doesn't matter?
Just grass. It'd be like Michael Phelps being allergic to water.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Problematic.
Yeah.
And then really the next thing that happened was that a teacher named Martin Hall, who I think last year, the year before, was the PGA National Teacher of the Year, he bought the book after Bobby Clampett. He's a British guy, and he'd been sitting there home in the UK watching the Open Championship and heard Bobby Clampett's name and remembers him talking about the golfing machine this and Homer Kelly that and Ben Doyle. And so Martin had got in touch with Ben Doyle, got a copy of the book, read about a chapter, and then just binned it. Just couldn't work his way through it. And then as he was struggling with some different theories about how to become a better teacher, revisited the golfing machine and found an instructor who came and then it really clicked for him, was able to explain it in such a way that it really clicked for Martin. And in turn, and that's the way that Homer wrote the book. His book is, as advertised, by Homer in the book, written as a textbook. And he used to use the example that, you wouldn't become a cardiologist by picking up a copy of Gray's Anatomy and starting to work your own way through it. You get a teacher and you text and you start, working and practicing. And it's very much the same way with the golfing machine. And so, Martin Hall began teaching, and another really fascinating, you know, parallel is that just as Ben Doyle had found a young prodigy who, you know, who had recently lost a parent and was spending a lot of time at the golf courses, you know, partly as a place to go get their mind off of things, but certainly a prodigy nonetheless. You know, Martin Hall one day, one of the members at his club in Florida said that he'd like Martin to teach his granddaughter, a little tiny toe-headed 9-year-old who was, you know, barely as big as the bag, and that was Morgan Pressel. And she went on to become the youngest ever to qualify for U.S. Open, and that's someone since has eclipsed that record. But she became the youngest ever to win a major, male or female, you know, notwithstanding young Tom Morris, who played a different game in a different era. But Morgan Pressel was the youngest ever to win a major, male or female, when she won the Kraft Nabisco Championship, and she is all golfing machine baby, is her, as Martin Hall calls her. Now, he wasn't teaching her, you know, the sciences and things like that, you know, the scientific terminology, but, you know, he wouldn't teach her angle hinging, but he'd teach her, you know, methods that would, you know, more practical ways of explaining it that would make sense to a 9-year-old girl. And, you know, she's now one of the top golfers on the LPGA Tour. And then, you know, fortuitously for me, Brian Gay, PGA Tour player, is also a devotee of the golfing machine. He works through a teacher named Lynn Blake, who had studied under Homer. And, you know, Brian Gay, he's not just winning. He's won twice this year. He's not just winning. You know, he torched the field at the Verizon Heritage by 10 strokes. Mm. And then the week before the U.S. Open, won the St. Jude in Memphis by 5 strokes. And I guarantee you, this guy's not done winning yet. He is just he's just as smooth as they come. And you know, and so that's basically, you know, follows the arc of the narrative. But you know, through Morgan Pressel, finding an untold story in anywhere is hard to do these days. But finding one in the realm of golf is hard because it's a well-mined topic. But then even more so in golf instruction, which has been, you know, written about to death. So it's you know, it's a story about a guy who deserves to have his story told, and the time, you know, fortunately, you know, the time is now, and I was fortunate to have the opportunity to get exclusive and the first access to all his archives and artifacts. Have been sitting up in a storage unit up in Oregon. The guy who bought the business, Joe Daniels, who bought the business from Homer's widow, Sally, you know, has, like I said, everything sitting in a storage unit, and I was, you know, the first to be able to get to it. And so
how did that happen? Did you come to them? Did they come to you? How did you get to this story?
No, my agent actually knew the story. He'd been in touch with Sally, and he had been kind of waiting for the right time, the right writer, and things like that. And after I was coming off my first book, The Seventh at St. Andrews, he suggested that I look into this, and did, and it really it just clicked and resonated, and was a story I was really interested in telling. And I think that the Joe Daniels was, you know, obviously interested in continuing to get the word out, and this presented a good opportunity for people to find out more about Homer and his work.
Unbelievable story. He is so your book is not a golf instruction book. It's a story of a guy who did a golf instruction book.
It really is not. There is one chapter that deals with the science that was revolutionary. And other than that, Homer's book has all the instruction in it.
And Homer's book is still available.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thegolfingmachine.com.
Okay. And we'll probably, if that's available through Amazon, we'll probably put it on our site as well.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Because now I'm going to ask you about Homer's book, if you don't mind, but you were saying it's written as a textbook, but is it written for instructors or is it written for golfers? Can a golfer get the theories and put them to use on their own, or is this best utilized by a student who works with an instructor who understands the theories?
It's written for Homer's idea was for the book to be was for the book to be a textbook, and instructors would take that and then teach students. And that's not to say that the students couldn't go to the book, but the, you know, Homer had established an authorized instructor program wherein he was trying to keep consistent the way that this would be taught. A student can most certainly pick up the book. It takes some dedication and commitment. Once you get the glossary, you know, there's a glossary in the back, and once you really grasp the terms, then it really kind of opens it up and it makes a lot more sense. And in fact, for this, I actually went through one of the authorized instructor seminars just so I could grasp, the nuances of it.
I was going to ask you, how many times did you have to read the book before you started getting what he was talking about, or did that not intrigue you at all? Was that not part of your research?
No, it was, and I think, like I said, until I got with someone who was able to work through the glossary and then explain the concepts in kind of more everyday terms, that's when it really clicked for me, and I think that's, you know, generally true. So I think the ability to, you know, to get the book and to become, in a perfect world, I think a golfer gets Homer's book, works through the glossary, kind of gives it a cursory read, and it's cross-referenced, so you're jumping around. It's not like a start to finish. You know, you can kind of, this references that and then that back to this and whatnot. But there are authorized instructors, you know, all over the country, all over the world, that teach the golfing machine. And and that's kind of the thing for me, that I'm more of a word guy than a math and science guy, but the thing that really struck me was what Homer, when he would talk about how science doesn't take a day off, you know, Newton's laws don't change whether you and I are playing a friendly round or, you know, Phil's trying to win the U.S. Open. Those principles are the same, and they don't change. And so they're irrefutable. You know, you can't, there's no denying science, as opposed to feel. And one of the other key things that Homer said that was revolutionary was to learn feel through mechanics as opposed to learning mechanics through feel. And a lot of instruction books and teachers, you know, talk about feel, to my mind, it would be awfully difficult to start with feel and then try to, you know, fit the mechanics into that. That to me is like trying to put on, you know, someone else's left shoe with your right foot, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it just makes more sense to learn proper mechanics and then from there to start, you know, finding your way through feel.
Well, I've always felt that it, you know, people talk about thinking outside the box. And I've always thought that you really can't think outside the box until you understand the parameters of the box.
Yeah, exactly. No, absolutely. Yeah, you got to know what's in the box before you can think outside of it. Otherwise,
exactly.
What you're thinking might exist inside of it.
Right, exactly. You know, you've got to be an insider first to get outside of it.
Right,
which makes
and
it
I think
much
that's
harder.
The real, I think that's the real key to this is like I said, making the commitment to understanding what Homer's talking about. It's not easy. There are a lot of easier books to read, but I don't know that there are many, you know, better, more, more scientifically founded, you know, books out there.
Oh, and there are golfers who will absolutely love the content of a book like that. They just, I've been emailing with a listener who's asking me about the details on swing mechanics and looking at this DVD and reading this book. And I'm like, you know, for me, I can't learn that way. I need one instructor to focus on me and not get all this different input on how to do things, because it just makes me crazy and I get overwhelmed and I can't get anything.
Well, then you're definitely in the camp of people who should go seek an authorized instructor, because
right.
But here's the other thing too, is that a lot of people told Homer that he should make it easier to read. Hmm. And he just vehemently resisted that his entire life. And part of the reason was that every word has a definition, and if you change the definition, you therefore, you know, change, you know, the meaning of what you're trying to instruct. And he always said that, you know, people were going to have to, if, you know, it, you know, he wasn't looking for the casual student. You know, he was looking for the serious student who was going to bring, you know, you were going to have to step up to the material as opposed to the material coming down to you.
Right, right. We've had a club fitter on the program who is committed to working with golfers who are committed to getting to be single-digit handicap players.
I mean,
it's like, if you just need your grips changed or you need new shafts, don't bother this guy. You know, it's like, if you're there and you want to work really hard on improving your game and you want the exact right tools to use, then you got to go to this guy. It's almost the same. I'm curious. How long was it between the time that he had his first round where he shot a 116, then his second round where he shot a 77?
6 months.
6 months. And he didn't play golf at all in between that time. He just did this research on the swing mechanics?
I mean, there's nothing that I found in my research, and I talked to, you know, and it's interesting, too, there is... I could find literally no video of Homer. Now that's a function of the day, of course.
Sure.
But there's a ton of audio, and in fact, you know, I listened to a lot of the audio, and in speaking with, you know, 3-4 dozen different people who knew and worked with and were close to Homer, there's nothing that suggests that he played another round of golf in between. Whether or not he picked up a club and ever, you know, swung or hit a ball, this was 1939. So it's, you know, it's hard enough to find. I mean, think about that. You know, I'm trying to write a book about a common simpleton guy who played golf in 1939. You know, it's not like there's a wealth of research, you know, that you're going to get there. But I was fortunate Homer was a pack rat, and in his archives kept those scorecards. And wow. Those two scorecards are in the book. They're printed in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's nothing that suggests that he did play, and most of the, you know, the most of the people that I talked to, you know, went on record as saying that as far as they could tell, he did not play golf in between.
It's just one of those things that anybody who's ever played golf at all, if you told them, yeah, I've played twice, first time I shot a 116, then I played again about 6 months later and I shot a 77, it's like, no, I'm sorry, that's not possible.
Right.
You can't do that. No, just
no.
No.
Just really something else. Really something else. I mean, it's, you know, I've been at this for a good long while. I've been writing, you know, for the better part of 20 plus years. I've written a lot of golf, written for a lot of different magazines, you know, written a couple books that are, you know, both of which were, you know, based in historical research. And every once in a while, you know, I mean, I have a pretty good sense of when I've got something and when I don't. And I just knew when I started into this that there was something unique and special here.
Well, it sounds like this guy was also born at the wrong time. I mean, if he was around today, he'd be a total techno geek. He would be a computer guy, or maybe he'd be golf. But it just, in reading it, he just sounded like one of the Silicon Valley, you know, techno guys that are just changing the world today.
I mean, can you imagine, like, doing, I mean, you know, doing the level at which he did, you know,
without
any sort of computers or calculators or things like that?
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Unbelievable. Well, absolutely fascinating story, but two different things. I mean, there's Homer Kelly's book, and then there's your book, and they're very different things, but it's just a fascinating story, and you did a great job on your research and your writing. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much.
I very much appreciate that. And for those who are interested, there's more information and an excerpt and, you know, links to where you can buy the book online and in fact Homer's book as well, all at homergolf.com,
www.homergolf.com. Homergolf.com. And are any of the audio files accessible there as well?
No, it was enough for me to write a book without getting into without getting into the multimedia aspect of it. There are online. I think as you go, other people have audio, Homer's audio, available online. I don't know if thegolfingmachine.com has it, but that's certainly worth a look there for readers who are, or listeners who are interested.
Well, I would sure be interested in helping pursue that. We do a lot of audio here and would love to find ways. I'm sure the audience would also be fascinated in hearing some excerpts of that. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting stuff, I have to admit.
Fascinating story. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I would love for you to tell us a little more about your other book, The Seventh at St. Andrews.
Yeah, well, that was basically a good excuse to go hang out in Scottish pubs. And there you have it.
Okay.
The story came about when I had connected with David McClay Kidd, the golf course architect who really made his name at the tender age of 29 when he designed Bandon Dunes. And the story of how we met is as fascinating as anything else in the book, and that's all in the introduction. But we wound up, long story short, he'd called once when I was a travel editor at Golf Magazine. For some reason, I'd stuck his number in my phone. I was driving to the airport when I finally got my chance to go up to Bandon. I was driving to the airport. I got him. He was at airport security. I was going to Oakland. He was going to San Francisco. We were both headed to Portland and down to Bandon. And as it turned out, you know, I was in seat 3B on the plane and he was in seat 4B on the plane. And struck up a friendship, drank many pints, played a lot of golf. And then the opportunity arose for me. I was thinking about getting into books and just literally sent him an email, which is in the book as well, that says, would you be interested in collaborating on a book about the new course you're designing over in St. Andrews? And the book is about, it chronicles the creation of the first new course built by the town of St. Andrews in the last 100 years. And so there are other courses there, but the Lynx Trust, which operates the six courses for the town, of course, the old course, the new course, the Jubilee, the Eden, and then the short course and the executive course, which are the Stress Tyrum and the Balgove. The Lynx Trust was having capacity issues because anybody who lives in town or students can get an annual ticket to play the courses. So they were looking to build a seventh course. And everything about it, again, everything about it just shaped up, you know, brilliantly for a fascinating narrative from the politics of how, you know, of the different factions that wanted it and the ones that didn't want it and the ones that you think did want it, you know, actually didn't, and the ones you'd never thought you'd have on your side were. And then the actual plot of land was a derelict potato field with the town's sparkling new wastewater treatment sewage facility plopped right in the middle. And then the band these artists who work in dirt are truly unbelievable, the shapers and whatnot. And, you know, the team that David put together and the course that they came up with and just all the obstacles along the way. And at the end of the day, you know, the Lynx Trust was looking for 18 holes, and what they got was one of the great new golf courses in the world. And so it was a unique opportunity to have seen it from the start in the dirt and to have followed that. And again, a lot of it is just as the Homer Kelly book is not an instruction book. This is not a how to build a golf course. It's about the people and the place and the politics. And it's a really, you know, I found a really interesting read.
Great stuff. The Seventh at St. Andrews and the new one, Scott Gummer writes about Homer Kelly's Golfing Machine, The Curious Quest That Solved Golf, with a foreword by Steve Elkington. Scott, best of luck on the book. Thanks so much for sharing the story with us. And they are, both books will be available, and hopefully we'll also get Homer Kelly's book all available on the Golfer's Mart section of golfsmarter.com. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Thanks so much.
You are quite welcome. Thank you. And congratulations to Christopher Brand. Hey, Chris, don't drive off the road. People get a little weird when they hear their name in a podcast, but Christopher Brand of Golden Valley, Minnesota, you are this members-only episode winner of the latest in iron protection technology, a 10-piece cover set of snug neoprene iron head covers courtesy of Iron Armor. Check them out at ironarmor.com. That's IronArmor.com. Today's show is brought to you by the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. As a member, you are eligible for discounts that are better than anywhere else you'll find on the web. The Dixon Earth golf balls. Buy two boxes and get one free. The Tour Tempo Microplayer sale is still going until December 31st. And, of course, our latest Click Gear three-wheel push cart. This is a great holiday gift you can get for yourself or have someone else buy for you. For only $179 delivered to any address in the United States. That's a full $20 below any other retail site you'll find, and you can choose from any of six colors. This is a time of year, of course, that we like to take stock of who we are and what we have and give thanks for the little things we may usually take for granted. I hope you know that I don't take your support for granted. Thank you for being a Golf Smarter member, and please let me wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving. We close with this little quote that Homer Kelly would have spent another 5 years pondering if he had the chance. If it ain't broke, try changing your grip. Next week, the first of a two-part conversation with certified PGA instructor and winner of more than 200 tournaments, John Grund, talking about what it takes to win at golf and what the best players have in common. If you have any questions, quotes, or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Check out Golf Smarter on Facebook or call our toll-free Google Voice line at 415-448-6788. And, of course, I encourage you to click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.